We go and grab a quick bite.
We watch a movie, then fight.
We're the Fast Food Film Friends.
You listen to Fast Food Film Friends, the show hosted by two brothers who are going to need an ambulance after they eat what they're about to put in their bodies. My guest today is Kevin.
I'm excited to be here as your brother, as somebody who's going to feel like absolute trash and probably need an ambulance, and somebody who's here to just spread the good word about this film that we saw last night, because this is not a normal episode.
No.
This was not a planned, you know, way ahead of time, we're going to do this movie with this food. This was we got out of the theater last night. We both ran to the bathroom, helped each other pee, got back out and I said, Nathan, wait.
Because I tried at the urinal.
Yeah,
engaging you in conversation.
And I'm not a urinal talker. That's just not how I operate. Unless it's with strangers, then I feel rude not to. But with friends, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
We got out in the hall and I said, this is something that people need to know about. And I said, we can talk about this right now, or we can not say another word, walk our separate ways, reconvene in the morning and do a podcast on this. Because it is an absolute emergency that people hear about this movie.
So I think that most of our conversation is going to be probably diving into the nitty gritty of this movie and just kind of spoiling whatever.
Yeah.
Before we do that, before we eat this, we got some Wendy's breakfast.
Yes, which I'm excited for you to try.
Yeah, we got some different food. So we're doing it live. We're eating whatever.
Fuck it.
And before we get to any of that, just like totally high level non-spoiler.
Yeah.
What do you want people, like what's a 2-minute takeaway, what would you tell people about this movie? I don't know if you even said, it's called Ambulance.
It is called Ambulance.
It's a Michael Bay film.
Brand new Michael Bay.
It's a new
fresh out of the dealership Michael Bay.
Michael Bay, best known for, you know, Transformers, Bad Boys, The Rock.
The Rock.
The Island, Pain and Gain. God. Just big, dumb spectacle, I would say, is what Michael Bay does best.
Explosive excellence is what I would call it. Like, this man knows how to make a loud, in-your-face action movie. And this movie is no different. This is like the Michael Bay film to end all Michael Bay films.
It might be.
And like, you had just seen The Rock a couple weeks ago. Like, he throws back to his own movies, which is great in this film.
Just ridiculous.
But I would say, like, a quick synopsis. This is a just an adrenaline-fueled, like, it seems like a dream. Because it's shot like my own dreams. But it is such an intense movie. It is absolutely absurd. It is full of action. It's one long car chase, essentially. And it is something that I think people need to see in theaters because it is so much fun to laugh at, not with. I want to make sure. I don't think we laughed with this movie a lot, but it's hard to tell with Michael Bay.
I really don't know. All I know is that I was thrilled. This is a 2-hour-and-15-minute movie. This is on the longer end.
Super long.
And I just want to say, you and I saw this,
yeah.
And there's probably 20 people in the theater. It was, you know, the IMAX theater.
Yeah,
I don't think I saw a single person get up to go to the bathroom.
Not one.
Because when would you?
Not one. And that's the thing. And I thought, I didn't know. I kind of went into this really blind. I had not even seen a trailer. I didn't know anything about it, really. You kind of roped me into this.
I often do.
I think I saw one tweet about it that was like, this movie's out of control adrenaline. And I was like, have you heard anything about this? And you were like, I got you a ticket for 8 o'clock tomorrow. Let's go. I was thinking it'd be like an hour and a half, hour 45. And I left feeling that it was. Like, I had no idea it was 2 hours, 16 minutes.
Yeah.
No idea.
It's really not often that a movie this long can pull off not feeling anywhere near this long. But, man, it really is. It's like the climax of a film.
Yes.
But for 2+ hours.
Exactly. There's no stoppage. There's no way to stop the movie. There's no stopping anything in this movie, actually. As Jake Gyllenhaal and Yahya Abdul-Mateen II say very frequently, we don't stop. I think it's... we're sharks, we don't stop at one point. And then what's the other one they say? We're a train. We're a locomotive.
This movie gave me Speed vibes at a few points. And like, there are long stretches where they literally don't stop driving the ambulance.
No.
And they're being chased. So it's like, obviously they want to keep going fast, but there's no real reason that they can't stop.
No.
There's not like, if we slow down, this happens. And it's just that if we slow down, this movie might hit a lull. Therefore we can't.
But I do like that they give the cops plenty of like pit stops. Like the cops to keep stopping, reconvening, and then going back to chase.
And then they somehow catch up with
them. Yeah, it's amazing. It's astounding. It's astounding, truly. Hell of a driver.
I just want to say, before we get into the food and spoilers, I think that if anyone leaves this movie feeling anything less than completely satisfied, then you don't know what you're getting yourself into.
You don't know cinema.
If you understand the parameters, like,
yeah,
watch the trailer. Look, like, what, set your expectations. Because at that point, what you think you're going to get,
mm-hmm,
you will get out of this movie and more.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think it was just... Can I just put this in a context? Because
I want this to make your top 10 list of the year. Like,
that's the thing, is like, I sometimes feel like when we're like excitedly telling people, hey, check this out, when like there are such, we saw a movie the night before this.
Yes.
That is such a better movie, and we'll talk about when we get around to making a normal episode.
Yeah.
But like, a movie like Ambulance is such a special treat that
it is.
I really think that it's the kind of movie that most people probably hear about and are like, I'll wait to watch that on streaming. Like,
yes,
it's not this exciting thing all my friends are seeing. Mm-hmm. And like, I wish everyone's friends were seeing this.
Well, it's like you're at a normal like entertainment dinner and you're having like your normal TV show entree. And then somebody comes up and says, do you want a quadruple layered, triple thick chocolate lava cake of just action and ridiculousness? And you're like, normally I wouldn't, but tonight I'm gonna. And then you just devour this disgusting thing, this thing that should not be as good as it is. And you're just like, that's exactly what I wanted and needed.
Yes.
It is. Like, that's the thing. I saw two movies the same day before this, because it's the Wisconsin Film Festival right now. I saw like two fantastic movies, a classic movie, a brand new movie that are like some of the best I've ever seen. And then I went into this and I was like, this shouldn't even be considered cinema. Like, this should not be considered cinema compared to the two I saw, like a Francis Ford Coppola masterpiece and Cooper Reif's new movie, Cha-Cha Real Smooth. But it's so fucking good at being what it is, which is just like this action-packed, adrenaline-fueled, blood-soaked, explosive movie. And it makes you appreciate movies so much because they can 100%. Be such totally different things.
There is no other medium, not even television, nothing that comes anywhere close to what this movie will do to your body while you watch
Absolutely not. You are along for the ride. Turn on the sirens. You're going for a ride when you step into this movie.
You are basically right now. So in the past 48 hours, you've watched, I think, four movies in like a theater setting, and you're about to watch many more in the next few days. You are on a movie bender.
Yes, I am.
And you're going back and forth between your normal drugs, you know? You're like, this is, I gotta get up, gotta get down. And then last night, someone was like, do you want to try this new thing? And you're like, I don't think so, but okay. And then you did, and it opened your mind up to a whole new world of sensations.
Or I've just lost my mind from being watching so many movies in so few days. I'm watching, I think, 11 movies in the next like 3 days, which is not recommended, I have to say. Like, I got home yesterday and my girlfriend was like, why are your eyes so red? And I was like, I worked on a computer, and when I wasn't doing that, all I did was stare at giant screens without blinking, blinking as little as possible. And even today I woke up and I was like, I look like I just smoked a joint. Like my eyes are just so dry from watching things. And I'm going to watch probably two or three movies today, which is a treat. But this one will forever be like a marker. It's not in the film festival that I'm watching all these movies in, but this is what I will remember the film festival for. Like, that's the one I watched Ambulance during. And it really made me, I don't know if it's appreciate or like maybe appreciate the other movies so much, but I appreciate this movie in such a weird way.
Yeah. I think you are so right in the way it made me. I sat there during the movie thinking, I just appreciate cinema so much because it can give us such different things. Mm-hmm. And like, I just love that you and I have our plate is so full of the thing. Like, we just appreciate everything.
Oh, yeah.
And I love it.
Slap it up. Throw whatever you want on there. I'm going to eat it. I'm going to at least try a little bite. I'll probably eat it all.
I think you and I, speaking of eating every bite, should open up this Wendy's breakfast.
Yeah, we should actually, because I'm hungry. Nathan, I got one of my absolute fast food items, I think, on the market today, which is a Wendy's Frosty Chino. If you like a good iced coffee, if you like a mochaccino or a cappuccino, that's right, Bird Outside, you love them too. it's like an iced coffee mochaccino with frosty flavoring, and it's so... It actually lines up really well.
I was going to say, it sounds like Ambulance the drink.
Decadent. It is overdone. It is unnecessary. But at the end of the day, I really like it.
And you're going to finish it.
I like it. And then I got some of their fries, which I think are possibly the best fries in the game. They're breakfast potatoes. I don't know if they're technically fries. What would you call those?
Wedges.
I wouldn't call those wedges because they've got straight sides. Wedges have...
That's a good call. That is the only characteristic of the word wedge.
Thank you.
They are home-style fries.
American fries? I don't know.
What are... What's the alternative?
French. I think. I don't know. I feel like... I feel like I've had American fries at like a diner and they always say American fries on the menu and I order it and it's never like, the same.
It's like they're thick. They're like almost an inch wide.
They're like wedges if you took the sides and de-triangled them, made them parallel lines instead of perpendicular lines.
Can we just, instead of wedges, can we call them rectangles?
Yeah. Rectangular prisms without square ends.
Why doesn't one just call them that?
It fit on the menu really well. And then I don't even remember what sandwich you got me, but...
I got you the bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit.
Bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, which I have not tried. And I thought it was a good kind of staple, you know, to compare against other fast food restaurants.
I our last normal episode, which was, I think, 4 months ago,
yeah. We
got the hot honey chicken sandwiches, and I got the hot honey chicken biscuit.
You got that today?
I got that.
I'm getting you a plate, because that thing, I don't think you understand. All right, you eat it over your foil, but if you get any on this table... I will destroy you. And I told you how messy those things are.
Okay, this hot honey chicken biscuit, it smells fantastic.
Yes.
Looks like a nice, small, crispy chicken breast. My biscuit is just soaked in honey, I can see. Let's just eat.
Let's do it. Mmm. Mmm. Holy shit. Like, a biscuit's very easy for a lot of places to do. That hits so nicely. Bacon's good, egg's good, cheese is weirdly great. I don't know what they are using on this.
This biscuit is nice and dense.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Buttery. It feels strange you and I eating different things at the same time.
Doesn't feel right.
But mine, I think that hot honey chicken works so much better on this than it did on like a normal chicken sandwich.
Yes, 100%.
And this is going to be like a new go-to for me, I think.
Yeah, this biscuit's going to add about a centimeter to the bottom of each of my teeth, I feel like, for the day. Mmm. We should have cut them in half.
Mm-mm.
Too late. You wouldn't have shared that anyways.
No way.
Man.
Let's have a rectangular prism.
All right. Now, these are a little, you know, they've been sitting. But you imagine them hot and crispy? They're so damn good.
It's good seasoning.
It's so good. Is it just salt and pepper? They got to put something else on there.
It's those thick pepper flakes, though, you know. It hits different.
God damn it. That phrase. I'm so sick of hearing it hits different. And I know you're going to sneak that in like 6 times in the rest of this episode. This biscuit is straight up KFC biscuit level. It's like they got the biscuit from the same place as KFC. And then they put delicious things on top of it. It's so buttery.
Yeah, I agree. I think we've at some point talked about one of the times we ate KFC, talked about how do they not have a breakfast menu?
Yes.
And I feel like Wendy's is now filling that void.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Never going to KFC again. I can get the biscuits at Wendy's.
And speaking of KFC, this chicken breast on my biscuit, it's nice.
See, now we have to wait a little while we get set up to record. We had a few events occur that made us push out our start time even more. So you get that sandwich hot. And the honey is literally dripping off of it. Like, yours is kind of soaked into the bun and the chicken, I think. When I got it and immediately took it out of my car while driving on the highway, honey was everywhere. Like, not enough napkins in the world. I had to just go through a car wash and put my hand out the sunroof. It was the only way to get it up.
I might argue this is the better way to eat it.
You might be right. Let it settle. It's kind of like I like a Jimmy John's to sit and settle for a while. Mm-hmm. I don't like a fresh Jimmy John's. I want it to kind of... all coagulate a bit.
Yeah, so that liquidy mayo kind of really getting all the crevices.
Getting all there. Filling all the gaps. Filling all the gaps.
Speaking of leaving no gaps for anything else but pure substance.
Mm-hmm. Pure substance.
Ambulance. So from this point, I think spoilers are fair game.
There's no way we can talk about this. We can talk about the first 3 minutes of this movie without spoilers. And that is a... almost unnecessary flashback.
And well, we start off with this extraordinarily efficient character building introduction to... So, okay, when you refer to them, Jake Gyllenhaal is Danny.
Danny.
Yahya Abdul-Mateen. He's the guy. He recently was in like Candyman, the new Matrix. Candyman? The new one, I saw.
Yeah. Was it good?
No. It's not.
Right.
He's been in a lot of stuff lately. I think he was actually really good in this movie.
Yeah.
His name's Will, his character.
Mm-hmm.
Danny.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Will.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we also have an EMT, which is, I think, Aza Gonzalez. Yeah.
Named Cam.
Right.
I will refer to her as Gal Gadot at least three times. Because when she first came up, I was like, holy shit. And then I was like, wait, that's not Gal.
There's actually a number of actors in this movie where I was like, wait, yes. is that Josh Duhamel? No,
yes.
It's not.
There's so many. Okay, so that guy's from Army of the Dead. Do you remember him?
I looked it up and then remembered.
Because yes. I was like, the whole time I'm thinking, who? And it's the same character.
Yes.
It's the exact same character.
Yes, exact same
like
guy.
Like the dickhead cop who wants to like run the show and is somehow overly casual in both. But I could not place it. The whole movie was driving me crazy. And then I was very happy.
So right off the bat, Will, he's got a wife and a young kid.
Yep.
He's in his house on the phone with an insurance agent.
Yeah.
And just based on where the camera is looking, we learn everything about this guy's life. We learn
Medal of Honor, Purple Heart.
Wife is very stressed with a young baby.
Yep.
She's got her meds.
Yep.
There's a shot that goes towards a binder on a table labeled Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Which I think if you serve, you obviously have a binder the country where you went.
Yep. It's correct.
But in like 10 seconds, you're like, I have a full picture of this guy.
Yeah,
he's just on the phone.
Absolutely.
And it's genuinely great.
It's efficient.
It's a 2-hour, 15-minute movie that spends 20 seconds on what would be called the exposition.
Yes.
And from there, we're off.
We are off. I have like, you get a full picture of this guy's wife. You also I want to like grab him because... Are we getting into spoil? I just feel like he's talking to this insurance agent. And he's like, I've been trying to get a hold of somebody for weeks, you know? And it's like, why don't you go in and like talk to somebody? Like, stop calling before you resort to a bank robbery.
The guy's busy. He's got a little baby.
That's true.
He's got a lot of shit going on. And you sense that desperation.
Yes.
So then he goes to his old friend or his brother.
Yeah.
Because he was taken in. Will was taken in as a child into this family.
Yep.
His brother, Danny, Jake Gyllenhaal, who is a rich, like a heist lord. Like he's so infamous for doing heists that like his car is tracked by the cops. Like, and yet he has a very established like business. He's
full of cars,
living comfortably, has a whole team of guys, and he's like, at some point, don't they like say the number of heists he's done? It's like some crazy number of things.
No, 29 banks, and then he's like, oh, 30 now, or 28 and now 29.
And at no point has he had to run away from LA. He just lives there and he's just doing fine. That day happens to be when they're doing a heist downtown.
Yep.
And so he brings Will along. He's like, hey, I'll give you a cut. Because he's a great driver.
Yes. He drove in Afghanistan, and he also drives a sweet car today, like brand new Ford Bronco. I don't understand Jake Gyllenhaal's situation at all. Like, so many questions about it, but he's apparently done okay for himself. Like, his brother comes to him and asks for $231,000, just like $231,000, and he says, "How about more?" And it's from that point you're like, "Oh shit, they're in trouble." He's gonna try to get him to do God knows what. Could have gone smoothly.
So they go downtown for the heist.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, things go awry. I want to read you, by the way, the IMDb plot description of this movie is two robbers steal an ambulance after their heist goes awry.
Yeah.
Period.
That checks out.
That's the entire thing.
Perfect.
So the heist goes awry.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we've also met Cam, the EMT, and her partner.
Yep.
It's his first day, and she's clearly great at her job, but not a people person.
Not a people person.
And these paths collide because our main characters steal the ambulance.
Yes. Hijack the ambulance.
They hijack the ambulance. And the EMT is in the back tending to a cop who will...
kind of shot in a tussle.
The cop was, in a tussle with Jake Gyllenhaal, with Danny.
Yeah.
And then Will saw that, shot him, didn't really mean to, felt terrible.
Yeah. Tries to save him.
Yeah, morally conflicted, I would say.
Morally conflicted.
They bring the injured cop and the EMT. They're in the ambulance when it gets hijacked. So now we have this real complicated situation.
Yes.
Where the ambulance they're trying to get out because they're trying to leave the scene of a crime.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, there's cops all over the place, mm-hmm. and they stop them. They're like, "Hey, what are you doing?" They're like, "We got a shot cop in here. We got to get out of here." They let him go.
Yeah.
And that right there is kind of the dramatic tension of the film, is that mm-hmm. the whole movie, they're after this ambulance because these guys robbed a bank, shot a cop.
Yep.
But in the back of the ambulance are two public servants,
yep.
one of which is almost dying.
Yeah. Yeah. You summed it up really well there. I mean, and that's, from there we go on the chase. I think I do want to talk about the bank robbery because it is such an absurd series of events, like such an absurd series of events that they go, they rob the bank. It's, you don't really see much of like the, you know, hands on the ground, like get on the ground.
Yeah.
You
should leave that out,
which I thought was a really interesting
yeah,
choice.
Yeah. I thought so too.
Basically this cop knocks on the door. He wants to flirt with the bank teller. He wants to ask out this bank teller. And he knocks on the door. Jake Gyllenhaal comes to the door pretending to be the bank manager. They're closed in the middle of the day. Doors are locked. He's like, "Oh yeah, we're transferring money. Standard procedure." And he then lets the cop in to like flirt with this girl, which is just to me to like say no to the cop. You don't have to let the cop into your fucking bank robbery. That's so dumb. And then because of that, like 40 people die because this guy wanted to ask this girl out. But I like that they left out most of the bank robbery. It all goes south from there. And then the number of police that instantly swarm on this bank is just astoundingly like,
well, it's scary across the street
from LAPD headquarters.
Right.
But they send out like every cop.
Oh yeah.
Like 30 like armored vehicle personnel carriers. Like, like they surround this bank and then they still just like, it's just gunfire everywhere. Like the most gunfire I think I've seen in a movie since like Heat.
I was just gonna say that scene,
yeah,
where there's gunfire on the streets, mm-hmm. I think is so influenced by Heat.
Yes.
Especially in the way that the music drops out and all you're hearing is like the echo of gunfire.
And let me tell you, I've never heard louder gunshots in my entire life. Like, I don't know if it was because we were at IMAX or if Michael Bay's just like, come on, higher, turn it up. I want each gunshot to blow somebody's eardrums off. Like, it is, and these bullets, one bullet makes every buddy it hits like fly back 4 feet, flailing around through like a plate glass window. Like, it's just, and that's when you kind of realize like, oh yeah, Michael Bay, we're back to just pure Michael Bay right now. Oh, it was just, it was a very good indicator of what was to come, to say the least.
Well, and you say back to Michael Bay, but I feel like there was like a more grounded threat of violence than you expect in most yeah. Michael Bay movies. Like, yeah. It really did feel, you felt that intensity of like, mm-hmm. I don't want to be anywhere near this.
No.
I think that Michael Bay movies also typically have like lots of one-liners.
Yep.
And there's some of that later, but like, this is a mostly humorless movie, I would say. It's, I mean,
intentionally. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But like, it really does lean into the action, into the thriller mm-hmm. aspect of it.
100%.
Like, for long stretches.
100%. He does sneak in like some oddly politically like toned one-liners that you're like, I don't even know what you're trying to say with this line. Like, there's 3 or 4 lines throughout, like what, like that you're just like, is Bay just trying to like sneak in some boomer humor into this at a certain point?
I thought about that, and last night I was actually looking up his credits. He actually has never had a writing credit on any really? Of his movies.
Wow.
So, but there is like a similar tone in the dialogue that you kind of expect to yeah. get in his movies. So I wonder if he, I don't know if like maybe he has influence and he likes to throw those kinds of things in himself.
Maybe.
I don't know. You're right that this movie tries to toe the line of like, there's so many points where I'm like, is this social commentary?
That's exactly
or is this absolutely exactly or right. is this absolutely not? And my brain is poisoned.
Well, that's the thing, because it's like they rob the bank. They've got $36 million. Is that $32 million on a table, like an absurd amount of cash on a table? And they're like, has anyone seen? You ever seen this much cash before? And yeah, I was like, yeah, in Afghanistan when I was giving it to the Taliban. And I was just like, I looked around like, what? What? Like, he's the guy. He was the guy on the tarmac. Like, I don't understand. And then, like, there's 3 other, like, a liberal comment from the captain.
Yeah, out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. And it's like, even if I was a character in this movie, I'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, what? You start to question, like, is this a commentary on militarized police? Is it a commentary on like, you know, our healthcare system? It is, and it kind of is in a really absurd way.
Yeah, I think it's vague enough that you can kind of put whatever ideas you yes. want onto it. Like, you don't come away from it feeling like I know what they wanted to say with this movie.
However you feel politically, you're going to leave this movie feeling like it agrees with you.
Yes.
No matter what. If you're like, let's go police. If you're like, I hate police. If you're like, our healthcare system's a nightmare.
our healthcare system rocks.
Yeah. Either way. You know, we do have good EMTs. This movie proves it. but it's so agreeable.
And I think that, The Rock, mm-hmm. Michael Bay's first film is kind of similar in tone.
Is that
tone.
His first one?
I think it's his first one. Yeah. God. That or Bad Boys, I think.
Ugh, either way.
They're both about like the individual over institutions.
Yes.
You know, like this is like healthcare as a whole is fucked, mm-hmm. but like a good EMT, that's a hero, you know,
yeah.
or like the military industrial complex. We treat our veterans terribly.
We do.
But like this one hero, it's what it's all about. And like, I mean, yeah, you get into like, there's even at one point there. So there's like kind of like a gag where they're on an elevator.
Mm-hmm.
Someone gets on the elevator wearing like a mask.
Yeah.
Like a COVID mask. Yep. And I'm like, are they bringing that into the universe of this movie? Because that's the only reference or anything.
Yeah. I did think that was strange.
Because they're wearing like robbery masks, and it's funny because, you know, masks.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's just like one of many just little thrown in, just like, you know, they're filming this probably in 2021 and they're just like, we're just going to pepper that in.
Just a little one, not like these fries, just one little bit of pepper.
one little grain
of pepper. it's odd in that way. It really is. And I think, there's these weird, like, timeline-wise, it's hard to place where exactly it is because nobody else is wearing a mask or anything like that. And also, some of the technology they have at certain points, like the surgeon FaceTime vital sharing software that allows them to reach a surgeon on the golf course, send vitals through what looks like FaceTime.
Oh, through, by the way, this is through the cop's phone.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't, like, something he would need for work.
No. It was absolutely absurd, but it doesn't have to make sense. And so one person wearing a mask, the least of our concerns.
Yes.
Throughout this movie, for sure. One thing I'm very concerned about is just the number of fruit and veggie stands that get absolutely massacred in this movie.
Okay.
Michael Bay loves cars crashing through fruit and veggie stands, through other cars, and through like homeless encampments off the side of the street.
Yes.
Like, it's just what he loves.
Not just carnage, explosive carnage.
Yes.
Yeah. And not because there's enough literal explosions.
Oh, yeah.
But there's also explosions of any other objects.
Yes.
Or
yes.
Spray.
And every time I see a line going through the air, I'm just ecstatic. Because that's what cinema's made for.
We have to jump ahead to our favorite moment in this movie, when we both lost our minds in the theater, when this is way, way later, and Will is driving the ambulance, and they're going through what looks like a massive empty parking deck.
You think like maybe the farmer's market ended like 4 hours ago or something, and there's just a few like stray stands left in this huge underground parking garage.
And it's, I can't emphasize enough how wide open and carless this entire parking garage is. Other than a few stands and a few people.
Yep.
They get chased into it, driving the ambulance. He mows down every stand. Like, he goes
like three or four in a row.
Like, in a straight line, as deliberately as one can.
That is my favorite part about this line, is that he is just driving in a straight line through all this stuff. Like, that's it.
Like, literally, he's just annihilating all these poor farmers' goods.
God.
And then
the guy from Army of the Dead.
As soon as he is done plowing through these stands, the cop, they're witnessing this through like cameras and everything.
Yeah.
He goes, "That's one hell of a driver."
Oh God. The laughter out loud that we had in the theater was so loud. Like, I think we laughed so hysterically during this movie that people were like, "It's not a comedy." And the lady behind us, too, her commentary was my absolute favorite.
Oh, my God.
Like, oh, my. Oh, no. Shit. But that line is just, like,
it's
unbelievable.
Perfect.
Unbelievable. There's so many good ones, though. That guy has a lot of them. I think the writing in general is just, that guy specifically, the great driver line, he's got, like, the hide-and-seek line, which, again, is, like, such a dumb throw with things. He's like, I think it's supposed to be like make you think about your childhood and what that feeling is. But he's like, you ever play hide and seek? You know that feeling when you're about to be found? I'm really good at making people feel that feeling.
It's like, man, very wordy and specific. Yeah.
It's like, what?
Metaphor?
Maybe just say that you're good at like finding people.
You know when children find other children? I'm like that, but with adults.
In a game with no stakes whatsoever, where you don't feel like you're in trouble at all, I'm really good at making guys feel that. That whole character is just a joke. I think one of my favorite characters, just because of who he's played in another movie, Todd from Wedding Crashers, the son, mm-hmm. Christopher Walken's odd artist son from Wedding Crashers, is in this. And I think it's the first movie he's been able to do since, because he had to age like 20 years to get away from Todd from Wedding Crashers. He comes in as an FBI agent, and he's pretty good. He's pretty good. I liked him.
He's good. At this point, when he comes in, which is maybe like halfway through, I'm like, are there too many cooks in the kitchen?
Absolutely. And then you get like, Zsa Zsa, who's like kind of the tech lady helping this guy too, who's also got a couple of really weird one-liners. Like, gets instantly sexual with the Army of the Dead guy. Way too many cooks in the kitchen. And we start this movie, they've got like a crew of like six other guys with them, and they're all dead.
The heist.
Guys. Yeah. They're all dead. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we get introduced to all these guys, they're all dead. It's too many people for sure. And like, there's a lot of, I think, just unnecessary things. Like the FBI agent being like friends with him in college doesn't need.
Yeah. He's like, well, and then at one point he's like, Danny is going to do this.
Yeah.
And he's like a very bold prediction. Mm-hmm. And the guy's like, how do you know that? We were friends in college.
Yeah. For like two semesters. So
15 years ago, you knew a guy.
And it was like,
based on that, you understand his full psychology.
Absolutely. And what he's going to do in an absurd situation. And it makes it sound like they had one night of drinking where they talked too much about their dads. And that was like the extent of their friendship in college.
And he was like, if I ever rob a bank.
Yeah. But it's like, did their dad have to be a murderer, bank robber? Did the FBI guy have to be a college friend? No. But did it advance the plot or storyline? Absolutely not. It did not at all. And they did not have to be. And it's like, there's weird things like that where I'm like, the thing is, it still goes by so fast, but you're like, this is not necessary. I don't need this.
Well, I think this stuff is all there to try to get you invested in each character. But I'm like,
yeah,
I'm invested in just the pure drama of the situation.
Yes.
Like, I'm already all in. I'm not like getting bored. No. I'm not feeling like distant from these people. Like, I am in this and I care. But what I don't care about is what you did in college.
What I want to know is over or under number of cars wrecked in this movie. I'm gonna set the line at 50 cars. Do you think there was more or less than 50 cars destroyed in this
Here's movie? What I think. On screen, less. Off screen, way more.
Absolutely.
You know, each one of those takes, they Many probably times. Did four. They're like, we need four of that exact car for this Absolutely. Exact shot.
Absolutely.
Just to get the exact right car flying off a bridge.
I think it still might be over 50 in the movie.
I honestly think it might be.
Because they hit so many cars. So many cars. Like, the ambulance does, but then all the cars chasing them collectively, there's like 600 chasing them.
Well, and then you get near the end, you had these like, basically they roll cars down the road as like bombs to destroy entire squads of cops.
The fact that they don't just ram this ambulance and like maybe the one cop dies. Instead, they kill like 50 cops, like trying to chase them. So many more cops die. Trying to chase them in this goddamn car chase. It is absurd. It's like,
yeah.
And then they're like, oh, the cops aren't going to back down. They lost a bunch of their, you took out a bunch of their boys. And it's like, well, just let the one cop die. Just let the one cop die. Stop the ambulance. It's just, it makes no sense to me. Like, the guy's like, it's the same with his dog, his giant stupid dog.
He's got this big St. Bernard.
Not a St. Bernard. Mastiff. Thank you very much. Mastiff,
okay.
Thank you very much.
In his backseat.
In his backseat.
Which takes up the entire backseat.
Yeah. Well, he drives a Fiat, which I loved, mm-hmm. I have to say. Hated that it was him driving it, but I love to see a Fiat in a movie. But yeah, he's got his giant dog, and it's the same thing. He's like, whatever you do, the dog can't get hurt. And it's like, whatever happens to this cop who's already almost dead, like, he can't get hurt. And like, that line of thinking to me is so insane.
Well, I think that's kind of like a... That's like a war-like line of thinking where it's like, we're going to go in and save these hostages, even if like 50 people die in the process.
Yes.
Like, it's like an honor thing, you know?
It is.
Like, if they just let that one cop die.
Yeah.
That's like somehow worse than like in the line of duty.
Yeah. Going 20 down. Cops. You're die. Right. Okay. I see that. Do you think Michael Bay's head exploded when they told him that you could put a camera on a drone? Do you think it just exploded?
Because people are going to get motion sickness from this movie.
40% of this movie is drone shots. 50% of the shots are captured by one of those giant inflatable flailing arms things. And 10% are actually actually decent cinema.
And when you say drone shots, it's like sweeping.
It's like drone racing. Like yes. If you've ever watched videos of drone races where you're in the drone, like going through abandoned warehouses and stuff, that is how a huge chunk of this movie is shot.
But there is a shot, and it may involve CGI, I don't know, but there is a shot where a car gets demolished.
Yeah.
And as it crashes, the camera goes through the window. Like, imagine the driver and passenger seat windows are down.
Yep.
Car crashes. We fly through the car.
Mm-hmm.
Camera turns to see the destruction.
I think that one was CGI. I think that
it probably was CGI. But there are still so many shots where that drone is going like 60 miles per hour.
Oh my God. Flying. Faster than that. I mean, he's scaling a skyscraper, doing a flip at the top and going right back down to get you to ground level. And there's 9 of those in this movie. Like, he loves the going down a skyscraper with a drone camera in this movie. It's just the camera work is out of control because the rest is like, it literally is so shaky. Most of it's all freehand. And it's like somebody laying down on the bed of an ambulance, just like wriggling a camera around and holding it too close to people's faces. And it is, I can definitely see people feeling ill in this movie because there's so much movement, not to mention a lot of gore as well.
Yeah. We got to talk about the goriest scene of all.
Oh yeah.
Which is also, I think, the most tense scene I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
Which is when the EMT has to do surgery.
Yeah.
You mentioned the whole FaceTime.
With the surgeons on the golf course. She's an EMT. She can't do surgery herself.
So. And the guy on the call is like, all right, puncture the skin. Cut the skin.
My favorite.
Like, those are his directions.
My second favorite line is, I'm now cutting the skin. And she's got this pair of like fabric shears. Like a 13-inch incision on this guy's stomach in the middle of an ambulance while Jake Gyllenhaal's driving like a madman. It is out of control.
And then they got to put their hands in him.
Wrist deep.
Deep.
Wrist deep. Wrist deep.
Pull out his spleen, which was nicked by a bullet, I think, or something.
Has a bullet on it.
And she uses her hair clip.
Hair clip. Well, for the surgeons are like, we don't want the spleen to rupture, whatever happens. We don't want that to happen. She's like, I'm removing the bullet.
Just explosion of blood.
Explosion everywhere. Spleen pops. And it's like, right before this, the surgeon goes, if that pops, he's dead in 60 seconds. And they're like, we need a clip. And she somehow is all out of clips. So they use like a literal butterfly hair clip to cinch this guy's spleen shut. And then they just sew him back up or tape him back up.
Which, that guy is dying from an infection.
Oh my God.
2 weeks later.
You think about where people keep those hair clips. That's in the bottom of a dirty purse.
Like, this guy has lice in his spleen?
Didn't even spray it with, like, alcohol or anything. Just clamp it. Clamp it. And, like, those aren't tight.
Exactly.
That's not tight.
You can put it around your finger. It's not going to destroy your finger.
No. It doesn't hold a lot of pressure. Maybe she's got a good one. Who knows? Industrial strength. But that, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, like, emergency medical work that happens in the back of the ambulance. Because you get the cop. Later on, somebody else gets shot. Yaya gets shot. And needs work as well. And it's a lot of fingers and bodies, not in the good way. Well, I guess it depends. Medical work is also a good thing. So I guess in another good way. But it is, not for people who don't like gore or guts.
I mean, during the spleen part, I was like, I can like barely wash this. Yeah. I usually have an iron stomach.
The lady behind us was literally like, had her hands up shaking like, oh no. When I looked back, cause I kind of hurt her and I looked back and I was like, that is exactly how I feel right now. just wild stuff.
So, I mean, the whole like middle hour of this movie is kind of hard to really, I mean, it's just a chase,
You
know, it's just the ambulance, them finding new routes. Ways of getting away from the cops, the cops catching up to them, or like some choppers join the chase.
Yeah. A lot of choppers.
And then turns out Danny has some cartel friends.
Yeah.
And he calls them.
I don't even know if friends is, I guess you know, friends of his dad, work together with his crazy dad, like, has some weird connection, but clearly owes them money, too.
Right.
Because that's, he's like, I'll get you all the money that I owe you and more, like $8 million, you get half, here it is, help us. And they organize, like, so quickly, the most absurd distraction, like, technique.
Because they learn that there's an ambulance yard where the keys are all in the gas cap.
Of course.
So they can go there. I don't think we even see them steal the ambulances. So that's just off screen.
Yeah.
Director's cut footage.
Cartel.
So they have like, what, 5 or 6 ambulances.
Yeah.
And then there's this scheme for the main ambulance with our main characters to come to like an overpass. And they paint that ambulance with spray paint.
I don't know. Okay. We need to stop there because it's a classic, like, one car pulls in, 6 identical cars pull out.
Which one to chase? Because one of them was...
Why do they paint theirs green?
I don't understand that.
Like, Jake Gyllenhaal calls, like, his assistant. It's like, get the spray gun, meet us here. I thought they're going to spray all the ambulances.
Right.
They only spray the one that they don't want the cops to follow. And it's like, that's absolutely the one I would follow. Like, it's still so clearly an ambulance. It's like somebody wasted one can of spray paint and tried to cover a whole thing.
I think what it honestly might be is that they needed to give the audience a way of visually following what the right one is. Christ. But like, I you're right. I don't recall there being any explanation for why they were doing that.
And then they just drive literally right past all the cops. And when they've pulled over another ambulance, they've got guns drawn on his assistant, the poor guy. And then they just drive by in a lime green spray painted ambulance and nobody blinks an eye. Nobody looks over. Nobody says, what about that one? Like, it's coming from the same direction 10 seconds later. And my jaw was like, this is absurd. I have to draw the line somewhere. And this is straight up absurd. When that lime green ambulance drives by 12 cops and none of them think to check that one. So dumb.
So this plan basically works. They make their way to like the cartel headquarters to meet up back with everybody and to exchange the money and everything.
Yep.
Which is when things get real hot.
Sticky.
Because the cartel, they're trying to take all the money.
Well, I think it's the cartel, the leader of the gang. I don't know if it's cartel necessarily, but the leader of this gang, his son dies. So basically they come up with... They pack one ambulance full of C4 and they roll that into a bunch of cops. They come up with one remote control lowrider with a literal minigun mounted in the passenger seat that sprays cops with bullets. They couldn't do a remote control for the ambulance, though. So this poor guy is in the ambulance loaded with C4, puts a brick on the pedal, jumps out the back, and then is like 40 feet from the cops, hits the detonator, and is trying to run away and gets shot by a cop. And so the gang leader's all mad that his son died, wants a little more, wants him to stick around, figure it out. He's grieving, you know, he's a grieving father. So I think he does want more money. But yeah, it's kind of a weird dynamic. So it's like $8 million, take it. Take the money, be happy. I mean, don't be happy your son just died, you know, but that's, you know, pretty good. It's like they say, that's a lot more than most people get for when people die.
And there was a kind of a standoff.
Yeah.
And then Jake Gyllenhaal and Will, they're having a moment together.
Because
at this point, over the course of the movie, tensions are rising between the two of them.
Yeah.
And by this point, they're like very angry at each other.
Yes.
Because Will basically is just, this whole time has just gotten roped into things that he doesn't really
want to be.
Yeah. And so, and at one point he's like FaceTiming his family because he's pretending that he has a new job.
Yeah. Which is... He's driving an ambulance like 90 miles per hour down a
highway. On the highway, window down.
Window down. FaceTime right next to the window on the steering wheel. Danny's in the back yelling insane things. This EMT's like right over his shoulder. Wife doesn't ask any questions.
You know what the wife hears?
That is it. That is it.
But instead, they share, you know, a very heartfelt moment on FaceTime. God.
Yeah, it's absurd.
And the EMT senses or is told... Because she's got a phone, the cop's phone. She's communicating with all the cops this whole time, giving them information.
Yep.
They tell her, maybe try to create a rift between these two guys.
You got to get close to Will.
And so she does, I think, genuinely get empathetic to him.
Absolutely.
And he, for her as well.
Yep.
And so by the end of the movie, basically, Jake Gyllenhaal is like the antagonist.
Yeah.
You know,
like, well, he is a will do... anything. He's Machiavellian in the sense that he'll do anything to get what he wants, which is to get away with money. He will do anything. He'll kill the EMT. He'll kill the cop. Whereas Will is, he's got a good moral compass. He literally gives blood to the cop to save his life because he's a universal donor. What?
Just like you.
Got to represent. So, you know, and the EMT Cam sees all this, knows he's a decent guy, and then, you know, sees him talk to his family, figures out he's doing it to get money for his wife's, you know, experimental research, and is like, oh, shit, he's a decent guy. He's trying to protect them. He's trying to keep them safe, even from Danny, which is, yeah. So Jake becomes the bad guy for sure at this point, and they're fighting. They're rubbing, what's that called?
Not uglies.
Bumping uglies. No, but they're getting hot and heavy with each other, and Will's basically saying, like, I'm out. Go your separate way. Like, I'm out. I'm not leaving without the EMT and the cop. Whereas Jake's like, let them have the EMT and the cop. Mm-hmm. Let's get out of here. We made it. We made it. And he is this whole movie just such a, like, he's got to be so tense at all times because he's just screaming, like, let's go! Let's go! All the time. We're like, we made it! Like, let's go! I just feel like he's all muscles flexed at all times.
I feel like if this was like an 80s action movie, he would be doing bumps like every 10 minutes.
Absolutely.
But in this movie, this is off screen.
This is off screen, but you know he is. There's no way he's that sweaty without that.
But then there's this little standoff in the gangs.
Yep.
It's the two of them mm-hmm. with guns pointed at them. They both have their guns in their hands.
Yeah, which I thought was strange.
And
that they would
and then, those guns taken. You know, they're having this kind of, Jake Gyllenhaal's kind of putting, he's giving a speech to his old buddy.
We used to always be together, go the same way, but now it seems like you want to go left and I want to go right, but we should both go left.
And then says go left over and over.
But he says it like four more times. I was going to say, if it was like one time, then like a look, maybe a wink, like it wouldn't be given away. But if I'm the boss of this gang and the guy's saying, go left, go, like they're dead on the third go left. Like they're both holding automatic weapons. Which is a terrible gang to not take automatic weapons off these guys.
So they just mow everyone down.
Yeah.
It's a massacre.
Yeah.
They escape.
Yep.
They then, you know, take, basically they're at this point, they're just taking back the ambulance and.
Yeah. Well, EMT shoots Will as he's getting back into the ambulance.
EMT shoots good guy.
Yep.
Fucks up. Now she's got to take care of him and the cop.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy really has her hands full, medically. And Jake Gyllenhaal is driving the ambulance.
Yep.
At this point, are they still just trying to escape? Because they end up at a hospital.
I think he knows he's trying to save his brother, and he knows that she can't. I don't think she can do it anymore. So he goes to the hospital. I think he knows he's going to the hospital. I don't think he has a plan once he gets there. I think he's just like, I want to save my brother. Because she's basically telling him, like, you need to go to the hospital. Otherwise, he's going to die. The cop's probably going to die. They get to the hospital. They are surrounded by the 6,000 police of the LAPD that are chasing them. And it is somehow even more tense.
because now it's just a straight up hostage situation where you've got the EMT and the cop in the car. And that's what they're yelling back and forth. I have them. He takes the EMT, takes Cam.
Yeah.
Points a gun at her head. I'll shoot her if you shoot.
Yep.
They get out of the ambulance.
Yeah.
There's guns. There's snipers pointed out everything.
I mean, there are so many guns pointed at this. There's... like literally somebody, once the door opens, somebody like a foot away with a gun at the door.
Oh, right.
Like two or three cops right there. And then there's five snipers at every level that they could possibly be at, also pointing huge guns at him. And what happens?
And then gunshot.
Bang.
Cut to black.
Cut to Jake Gyllenhaal's blood pouring out.
Yeah. You see, he has a chest wound.
Yeah.
And find out it was Will.
Will shot him.
His brother, who was laying on the stretcher in the ambulance.
Yeah.
Shot him from behind.
Yeah, which is big. And it's, you know, he hears him kind of saying, because Jake Gyllenhaal's lost it at this point. He says to the EMT, like, we're going to go outside. I'm going to shoot you in the head and we'll die together. And he's like laughing like maniacally because he's just had a rough day, clearly, and has lost his mind. And he's like, we're going to die anyway, so I might as well go down in glory or whatever. But yeah, Will shoots him. And then it gets even more ridiculous. I think the end is the most ridiculous part. Like, this whole movie's ridiculous, but they're...
So, both men are laying on the ground.
Yeah.
People come to tend to the EMT and the cop.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, you know, handcuffs on the two guys. Because in everyone's mind, these two guys are just co-conspirators.
Yep.
They're both fucked for life.
Yeah.
And the EMT is the only person who knows. No, Will shouldn't be punished like Danny. And so she, you know, jumps in, gets past people, and she's like, he needs medical attention.
Yeah.
Because they're like, we can wait.
Yeah. They want him to die. Now. They want both. The cops don't care.
Right.
They're going to let those two bleed out.
And so then she gets Will his attention, gets him in the hospital.
Yep.
And then essentially where we end is, so like,
I want to talk about the lack of police, like, standard operating procedure here. This EMT straight up just like walks away. It would lead to the FBI guy ask her like one question, like, tell me what happened. And she's just like, barely says anything, then runs to save Will. And then she's just free to go. Like, there's no questioning. There's no like care for her, or like not even one of those space blankets. Like, she gets nothing. It's just like, yeah, I'm going to grab my bag out of the back of the ambulance, which is an active crime scene, along with my jacket, throw them over my shoulders, just walk away. Now, Will has handed her a big stack of cash while he was almost dying and said, like, give this to my wife.
And she sneaks it in the stroller.
Oh, my gosh. Which... His wife rushes to the crime scene, is behind police tape, like they taped off an area. This EMT knows she's got the money in her bag, gets not even a foot past the police tape, not even a foot past it, takes out this giant wad of cash.
Not wad.
It's like a stack, a saran wrap stack of cash.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
If not more. And like, there's so many people around. Clearly going to be watching the EMT who's been on the news all day and who's just came out of the back of this ambulance. Like, nobody's got eyes on her. She puts this huge, it's huge. It's
like a very large dictionary.
Yes. And she just puts it in like the baby carrier, covers it up in a blanket, and walks away. Now, how cops didn't see that, I don't know. How somebody in the like giant crowd that's gathered around there didn't see it and just grab it out of the baby thing, because mom didn't notice right away.
Yeah.
I would have grabbed that cash for sure.
From a baby?
It's not that the baby didn't know it was there yet. I just thought that was the most ridiculous part of the movie. Like, so in such plain view of the cops, she did that. And just the fact that they let her go completely without like taking a statement even.
And then, so Will's in the hospital.
Yeah.
He's alive.
Yeah.
His wife and baby are in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the cop who was injured in the ambulance, yep, and the EMT,
mm-hmm,
they both end up protecting Will because, yeah, the cop, you know, is questioned.
Yeah.
He's shown the pictures of the men. Which one shot you?
Yeah.
He chooses. It was Jake Gyllenhaal, even though it actually was Will.
No, he doesn't do that. He doesn't do that. He doesn't choose Jake. He doesn't say Jake shot me. He points at Will and says, that man saved my life. Very important distinction, because he doesn't put blame on Jake Gyllenhaal. He doesn't say Jake shot me. He says, that man saved my life. He doesn't mention that he also almost ended his life.
Mm-hmm.
He just says, that man saved my life.
Good point.
Thank you.
And then Cam, the EMT, she removes some kind of evidence? Like, is that?
It's the folder of the little girl she saves in the intro to find her.
Because
First scene with her, they save this little girl's life who has a literal fence post through her body. Like a wrought iron fence post through her body. They save her. And her new EMT partner who is like, oh, I checked in on the Lindsay girl we saved today. She's going to make it. And this EMT's like, I don't care. You get them there. That's it. You know, the worst day of their life is just your Tuesday. And she like... is clearly very detached. She doesn't want to be attached to people she saves, because I'm sure a ton of them die. But she knows this little girl lives, so she goes in another ridiculous scene to like private medical information and finds this little girl's file to figure out where she is in the hospital. And then like this nurse comes in and is like, you can't be in, and just like stops. Apparently Cam gives her like a look, or they recognize her from the hostage thing. I don't know. But another nurse is like, let her, like, let her get into private medical information.
She's had a tough day.
Like, it's so strange. And then she goes and holds a little girl's hand, which is a cute little
Yeah. I think that character arc for Cam, the EMT, of like, in the beginning, it's just her job.
Blooded.
And by the end, you know, last shot.
Yeah.
Puts the bag over her shoulder. She's off for, you know, another day.
Another day.
I think that's the one kind of through line that, yeah, I actually was like, that was good.
I liked it. I mean, I like Will's through line too, but yeah, I liked
yeah, theirs. That's the thing. I feel like these core main characters, all the extraneous stuff, all the other cops, the other people, I'm like, I don't care what happens to anything.
No.
But these main people, I mean, I found myself getting really attached.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Will especially, you know, everyone loves a new dad and like a new family and Army vet, Marines vet, I suppose. And even Jake Gyllenhaal, for a while, you're like, I kind of liked him at first. I was like, I know he's a bad guy, but like, it seems like he's, you know, he wants to see his nephew. He's got his dad's little shoes for him to wear and all that stuff.
I think it was interesting casting. Like, they could have definitely gone with someone who was more hateable.
Yeah.
But they went with someone who, like, Jake Gyllenhaal, even when he's the most villainous person in the movie, he just has a charm. He's got a charm. That you just stay on his side.
He's really good at the charming / unhinged characters. Like, people who can switch between those two is, like, his wheelhouse. Like, I think of, like, Nightcrawler, where he plays, you know, a guy who can really kind of talk to people for the most part and get what he wants, but then is also absolutely insane.
Like in that Spider-Man.
Yeah.
He's the villain.
Yeah, Rey Mysterio. Or not Rey Mysterio. That's a wrestler. Mysterio?
I think so.
Yeah, okay. I really thought he was pretty good in this. Like, you forget he's Jake Gyllenhaal. You know, because he's a big name. It's hard for me a lot of times when I see him to forget that he's Jake Gyllenhaal. But I did keep seeing Candyman whenever I saw Yaya. It's hard for me to not think of Candyman, even though I didn't see it. I want to talk about two more things.
Okay.
One is the number of lens flares. Michael Bay, known for lens flares. There was one point in this movie early on where there's a really obnoxious lens flare, like, coming right across the middle of the screen, and they change shots. Like, it's shooting you over here and then cuts to the person you would be talking to. Mm-hmm. And the lens flare was exactly the same, like, from shot to shot. And it went back to the original shot and was still the same. And I was like, Michael, you can't just do that. You can't just, like, put an overarching lens flare on different shots. But he just loves those so much. And they are very distracting to me, like obnoxious lens flares. But my favorite thing, when I was looking up things on this movie last night, do you know how in the beginning, Jake Gyllenhaal's crew is, like, being put together? A guy comes in with a big beard and calls him Braveheart. He says, like, you look like the guy from Braveheart.
He says that, Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson from Braveheart. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was going through the cast list, and he's titled as William Wallace, his character, which is what Braveheart is based off of. The character Mel Gibson plays in that movie is named William Wallace. So I thought that was a very nice nod that they actually titled that character William Wallace.
There's little things like that where it's like specific, literal, real world things are referenced, such as, you kind of mentioned, the movie The Rock, the Michael Bay movie.
Oh, my God.
The cops early on have a conversation about that movie, about a line in that movie. Yeah. And they name Sean Connery. They also name drop Bad Boys at a different point.
Yeah.
I'm like, Michael Bay doesn't give a fuck.
No. It's, and I love it so much. Like, you had just watched The Rock, which it's one of, like, my all-time classic favorite movies. I have not watched it in years. Probably doesn't age well. But you had just seen it for the first time, like, last week.
Yeah.
And then for them to drop that line, like, we had talked about that line specifically a day before, and for them to drop that line into this movie, I was like, oh my God. We both looked at each other and started dying, because it's just astounding that he's reached the point he can reference his own movies in such a direct way. Not like an homage, just like a, remember this line from this Michael Bay movie? Like, I'm surprised I didn't say that.
Like, it exists in this universe.
Yes, which I love. Which means Michael Bay exists in this universe.
Yes.
Which is so great. Which is so great. I'm going to watch every movie he puts out. I'm going to watch every single one.
You and I were on the fence about, I mean, I guess I wasn't, but you were on the fence about even going to see this.
Yeah.
And I would just say to any listeners, if you made it this far and you haven't seen it because you just figure it's ridiculous and you're not going to, go with a friend.
Yeah.
You'll have a good time.
You will have a good time. If you know what you're going, you're going to have a good time no matter what. But if you know what you're getting, you're going to have a good time. We have not spoiled half of the things that are in this
movie. It's true. A lot more happens.
There's a lot. There's a lot that happens. But it is a ride. It is a ride in an ambulance, and you're going to have a blast with it. It's not classically good, but it's Michael Bay good. It's Michael Bay good. That's all I can say.
I think that you put it very well. It is a ridiculous chocolate cake.
Yep.
That you would say not classically good.
Yeah.
But do I want to scarf it down right now? I kind of do.
Yeah. Yeah. And you will.
I'm glad I did.
I'm very glad I did, Nathan. We saw this in IMAX, and man, that is the way to go. See it in IMAX if you can. I mean, this movie made us do our first emergency episode, which I hope is the first of many more emergency episodes when we see another just absurd movie that needs to be talked about like this. I mean, the fact that this episode exists is a testament to the wonders of this movie. And I can't wait to just shove this down all of my friends' throats until they go to see it. Because I think it is just such a blast. I'd go see it again. If I can get like a group of friends to go see it again.
I completely agree.
Think how much fun it would be with the movie group we normally go to movies with. Like, yeah. It would be an absolute blast. It's a treat, to say the least. That's all I have to say. I have nothing more to say on this, Nathan.
We'll be back very soon with a regular episode.
Mm-hmm.
But until then,
farewell.